Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. There's a lot to talk about today, but nothing more important than the assaults upon Christmas. That's what we're going to be looking at. We've been talking about the Grinch Report in recent days because it seems like there is an insidious assault upon Christmas itself. And, of course, behind that is an assault upon Christian conviction. What is it that is so offensive about Christmas? It's not Santa. It's not the more secular aspects of the holiday. It is, of course, the very centrality of Christianity to Christmas. And we're going to be talking today about why it is so offensive to so many and what we can do about it. I want to know what you are experiencing out there. I'm going to give you some very real-life examples from schools, places of worship, parades, and the rest around America. And so this entire show is really going to be an extended Grinch Report. But we're not going to just kind of rail against the reality. We're going to talk about why it's happening and what we can do about it. Meanwhile, I want to tell you about a group in Florida known as PEST, or at least that's not their name. They're an organization trying to help people with PEST, P-E-S-T. What is that? It is post-election stress syndrome or trauma. And these folks need therapy. This is one of those things I almost feel like I have to introduce with the words, I promise you I'm not making this up. This is from the Boca Raton News in Florida, and by the way, you remember that is in Palm Beach County, the famous county of hanging chads from the year 2000. The trauma this year was not hanging chads and pregnant chads. Instead, it was the reelection of President George W. Bush. Listen to this, and this is from the Boca Raton News front page story, and I quote, 20 John Kerry supporters met for their first group therapy session in South Florida Thursday, screaming epithets at President Bush as they shared their emotions with licensed mental health counselors. The first of several free noontime therapy sessions at the American Health Association in Boca Raton was designed to treat what mental health counselors have dubbed post-election selection trauma. So it's stress and some vocabulary, selection and others, P-E-S-T. Quote, if I had a cardboard cutout of President Bush and these people wanted to throw darts at it, I would let them do it, said Robert J. Gordon, AHA, that is the American Health Association executive director. Robert J. Gordon said this to the Boca Raton News. It's no joke. People with PEST were traumatized by the election. If you even mention religion, their faces turn blister red as they shout at Bush. Now, gentle listeners, ladies and gentlemen, let us all collectively take a deep breath. Let us try our very best to exercise some common sense, rationality, and compassion. In my most compassionate analysis, these people are nuts. This is absolutely, astoundingly ridiculous. And yet I think we need to know about it because this is not just some kind of peripheral group. This is the American Health Association, after all, in Boca Raton. This is a group that's supposed to be representing the cause of health, and they are dignifying this kind of mental nonsense by giving it, of course, a new syndrome name, PEST, P-E-S-T, post-election selection trauma. If this were meant to be made up fiction, if this were intended to be some kind of satire, we could laugh at it. But it's not. Unfortunately, tragically, it is real news. Listen to this. I'm scared, said one of the men who showed up for counseling. Democracy is at stake, and no one is rising to protest this president. I want to be a patriot, but it's impossible to be a patriot in an immoral war, said another patriot, a woman. She went on to say Bush is breaking up marriages and dividing families by keeping our troops in Iraq. Others directed their ire at Rush Limbaugh and his ilk. Quote, we mostly let them vent during the first session. This is Mr. Gordon speaking, the AHA director. By the third session, we'll be doing some meditation exercises to aid some of their symptoms. We may use visualization and some techniques designed for bipolar disease and other mental disorders. That might help them adjust to reality. Oh, I think I can help these people adjust to reality. November the 2nd is over. Get over it. Deal with it. This is America. What kind of paranoia is this? What kind of craziness is this? And of course, what kind of ridiculousness is it to dignify this with some kind of mental illness label and disease? And what kind of nonsense is this going to spawn in the future? Well, so much for post-election selection syndrome. The big issue here is what we're going to do with this kind of nonsense in America, and there is more nonsense coming. We should celebrate every ounce of common sense when we can find it. And one of the most important evidences of common sense is coming from U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Justice Scalia used his appearance recently at an Orthodox Jewish synagogue in New York to assail the notion that the United States government should maintain a neutral stance toward religion. Yes, that's right. You can imagine that this will send the secularists into their need for a new syndrome. But what he's saying is that in this case, the secularist trend has simply gone too far, and those who claim that the government has to be neutral do not understand, as Justice Scalia was making clear, that the government can't be neutral. In one way or another, it will be positive or negative. It cannot be neutral. It never has been neutral. And what Justice Scalia refreshingly said is that the government has not been neutral, and as a matter of fact, it has been for the religious expression of the people. It has been for the fact that America has a spiritual heritage. Indeed, it was birthed out of a Christian worldview and out of a shared Judeo-Christian worldview. And in this case, Justice Scalia gave examples of early support for religion from names such as George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin. He said this, and I quote, "To say that the Constitution allows the court to sweep away that longstanding attitude towards religion seems to me just wrong." He said, "I think we are forgetting our roots." And indeed, of course, we are. We're also forgetting the dignity of human life. In my Crosswalk commentary for tomorrow morning, I'm dealing with this, and in a most insidious way, we see the dignity of human life being assaulted in terms of the commodification of human life. Well, what in the world is that? That is the selling of human eggs as if it's just some other product, just some other form of service. In this case, we have the reality that in Australia, there is now advice given to people that they should go to the United States for designer babies. And reports in the Sunday Telegraph indicate that Australian couples are spending as much as $170,000 in order to obtain a baby born by an American surrogate. Others are paying $40,000 for fertilized eggs that are implanted in their own wombs. By doing this, they're going around Australian laws, which we need to note to our shame are more restrictive than American laws. And in going around the Australian laws, they're now going to the U.S. And furthermore, there are now firms, fertility clinics, that are advertising and soliciting Australian college women to come to the United States to sell their eggs for the use of these fertility clinics. And it's not just Australia. In Great Britain, the group known as the Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority is contemplating a change of policy that would allow clinics to pay up to £1,000, and that's just a little short of $2,000, to a woman for each egg. And just in case you had some doubt that designer babies are in the background of this, listen to one of the questions raised by the government in making this proposal, and I quote, "Should the physical characteristics of egg and sperm donors, such as skin and hair color and ethnic origin, be matched to those of the couple who have the baby as now?" The obvious question is being asked because there are those who would allow parents to choose what kind of genetic traits they want. Blonde hair, blue eyes, sports proclivity, intellectual ability, you name it. We have to watch these insidious assaults upon human life because the culture of death marches on little qualifications such as these, little changes in policy that appear very small but actually have a very large impact. After all, last week we were talking about the Groningen Academic Hospital in the Netherlands proposing to allow doctors to kill newborn infants, to euthanize them if they are judged to be unworthy of life, to have severe fetal deformities, or severe neonatal deformities, or to be in pain. And then the hospital had the audacity to announce that they are already performing these techniques and have already killed at least four infants. That is, ask now, do now and ask permission later. That's the obvious tactic that they have undertaken here. And you know, they're getting away with it. According to the hospital, they have reported these infant murders to the government, and the government has taken no action whatsoever. In the Netherlands, we see the culture of death, as Wesley Smith says, not only going down the hill, but going over the cliff. And we can look from the United States of America and say, look what the Dutch are doing. At least we're not doing that. But we will be doing it soon because the very same logic that you find now in the Netherlands is the logic that is taking hold in some of our law schools and some of our medical schools and certainly among euthanasia advocates in the United States of America. And furthermore, what does it tell us about ourselves as a country that the British now tell women seeking late-term abortions that even though they can't be done there, they can be done in the United States? And the Australians who want to buy babies saying you can't buy them here, but you can buy designer eggs in the United States. What are we becoming? We're supposed to be a light unto the nations. We're supposed to be a nation that is different because we understand the dignity of all human life, but we are negotiating that away policy by policy, piece by piece, and even now egg by egg. We're going to be back today to talk about Christmas, what's happened to it, why it has become so controversial, and what we're going to do about it. Get ready to give us a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
You're a monster, Mr. Grinch. Your heart's an empty hole. Your brain is full of spiders. You've got garlic in your soul, Mr. Grinch.
Mr. Grinch, there you've got it. This is our Grinch Report, and unfortunately, we've had a lot of material from which to choose in talking about the assaults upon Christmas. You know, here's the big deal. Why do people get so upset about Christmas? Denver's mayor actually proposed to change the big words over the city hall, from Merry Christmas to Happy Holidays because he said Merry Christmas would be offensive. In Denver's lights parade held in just recent days, floats were not allowed to say Merry Christmas. As a matter of fact, a float that was proposed by a church that was going to say Merry Christmas was turned down. This is Denver's Parade of Lights, and it has become a major issue, a lot of talk nationwide about this, because it has become kind of a flashpoint. It's an illustration of the problem in terms of the secular opposition to Christmas. Faith Bible Chapel in Denver, by the way, that's about a 4,000-member megachurch there in the Denver area, had proposed to have an entry in the parade. It was a float. It was going to say Merry Christmas on the float, and it was going to be explicitly Christian, nothing so much in your face in terms of people passing out tracts going down the parade line or anything like that, just a float that was going to have a nativity scene, talk about what Christmas was all about, and say Merry Christmas. That was too much to the Downtown Denver Partnership. That's the group that organizes this parade. They said, we can't do that. And the response of some of the people in Denver was that the parade organizers made the right decision. Bruce Dabosky, regional director of the Anti-Defamation League, said this, and I quote, "Our view is that we should trend toward the inclusive and be more respectful of our differences than to bow to the practices of the majority. We believe these religious observances are wonderful and belong in the home, in a house of worship, and in the heart, not in the public square," end quote. Now, I chose that particular quote because I think it tells us something we very much need to hear. He said, we're all for religion. We believe these religious observances are wonderful, but notice what he says, they belong, they're wonderful so long as they are kept only in the home, in a house of worship, and in the heart. That is not what our founding fathers died for. That is not the ideal of the free expression of religion and religious liberty that has been at the center of this country's experience all the way from its founding until now. This is the insidious influence of a secularist worldview that is trying to push its hatred of the supernatural, its hatred of Christmas, and its hatred of Christianity, now to the point that saying Merry Christmas is a hate crime. Oh, I know, I don't think anyone's been put in jail for it yet. But if you follow the logic of what's going on here, they're saying that Christmas itself is so tied to Christianity that if you say Merry Christmas to someone, you are indeed imposing your religious values on them. You are pushing some form of aggressive evangelism on them, and frankly, you could be hurting their feelings because maybe they don't want to have a Merry Christmas. Well, Winston Churchill once spoke of an issue, and he said, "This is the kind of thing up with which we shall not put." And I think that's where we are. Up with this kind of nonsense we're not going to put. We've got to speak out about this, and I think we have to be clear, and our challenge is going to be how we may be winsome and truly kind while also being firm on issues like this. And the nonsense just piles up. A report out of East Manatee in Florida. This is a school system on the west coast of Florida, the Gulf Coast. I'm reading from a newspaper article from the Herald Tribune there. Quote, baby Jesus and obvious religious references left public school holiday celebrations long ago, but now even snowflakes are being blown out of some Southwest Florida schools. That's right, snowflakes. Why? What is wrong with snowflakes? Oh, you didn't know they are a hidden Christian symbol. That's right. You know about the cross. You even know about the Christmas tree. You didn't know about the snowflake. You know, I don't want to be sarcastic. Yes, I do want to be sarcastic here. They have confused Frosty the Snowman with a theologian. This is absolute ridiculousness. The Freedom Elementary School in East Manatee and its principal, Gary Holbrook, said, quote, there's lots of rules and regulations out there. We're trying to be respectful of everyone. Anthony DiBello, principal of Braden River Middle School in East Manatee County, said, and I quote, you won't see any Christmas trees around here. We keep it generic. Well, what's generic? A palmetto bush? At Lakewood Ranch High School in the same district, students have set up a holiday tree, and they decorate it with ornaments reflecting all the season celebrations from Hanukkah to Kwanzaa. And the beat goes on. And then, of course, there are those who are trying to replace Christmas, or at least Christmas celebrations, with something entirely different. A group out of Livingston, Montana, is putting out a series of holiday cards that suggest a greeting for a holiday called Christmasica. I'm not even sure I can pronounce it, much less celebrate it. But it's Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, all these different things put together. And then there's a Raleigh, North Carolina company called Mixed Blessing. It's been in business for 15 years, and along with Hallmark and American Greetings, this company is now offering dual-purpose cards for people who want to say more than Happy Holidays, but less than Merry Christmas. You talk about a culture of political correctness, how do you slice it that thin? More than Happy Holidays, but less than Merry Christmas. What are you seeing out there in terms of your community, your schools, your place of work? What's happening in your town with relation to Christmas? Nativity scenes are being banned from public parks. Parades are saying no Christian floats. Some businesses are saying you can't say Merry Christmas. And in some public schools, children are even being told that they will be disciplined if they wear green and red to imply a Christmas celebration. Yes, that a report out of one school district in America. Give me a call and tell me what you think about all this and what you think that we as Christians should do about it. I mean, just being outraged is not enough. Frankly, I think it's important for us to be outraged by what's going on here. But you know, we're not talking about this today just in order to get our dander up and to get our blood pressure raised. We need to talk about how we as Christians should respond to this. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-8255. If you want to know just how secular our age is becoming, look at what becomes an issue of controversy. Look how people want nothing to do with Christmas. Look how they are saying, we've got to stay away from this. It is just too controversial. Notice that you have mayors, school principals, school superintendents, and CEOs of corporations saying, we're afraid we're going to offend somebody. But they are obviously more afraid of offending non-Christians than Christians. They think that the easier path, the safer route, is to just ban Christmas. But you can see the kind of insane exaggerations that come out of this in response. I mean, banning snowflakes? I mean, I'm a Christian theologian. Someone's going to have to let me in on the deep, hidden Christian symbolism of the snowflake, because evidently no one sent me that chapter in the theology text. I missed that lesson somewhere. But here you have a principal in Florida who says no snowflakes because that implies Christianity. Now, I have to say, I grew up in Florida. Maybe this principal's problem is he doesn't believe snowflakes exist in the first place. He's probably never seen one in East Manatee, Florida. But the bigger problem is the worldview that is behind this. And by the way, at Freedom Elementary School, that's where this incident erupted in East Manatee. They're going to be singing about America and patriotism at this year's winter concert. That's right. The only safe thing they can do in their winter concert, not a Christmas concert, is to talk about patriotism. Well, let's talk about the kind of convictions that those patriots had about religious liberty, about freedom of expression. Let's talk about the fact that there is a Christmas tree on the White House lawn. And let me in on a little secret. Congress and the Supreme Court aren't going to be meeting on Christmas Day. I guess that's some form of imposition of religious conviction as well. Tell me what you think. Give us a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Give me a call. This is the Albert Mohler Program, and the issue is Christmas.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, keep your Christmas trees under wraps, and whatever you do, don't take a snowflake to school. You're going to be charged with some kind of religious imperialism here or Christian hate crime, something like that. Now, I've been talking about some of these bad developments. Let me tell you, there's one heartening thing that came out just in recent days. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger lit the state's Christmas tree. That's right, it's a Christmas tree again by order of the governor, who said it is no longer to be known as a holiday tree, as it had been in a secular trend for recent years. Governor Schwarzenegger had made this pledge at a funeral back in May, the funeral of the late Senator William Pete Knight. And Light had not, that former senator had lobbied to change the name after Governor Gray Davis had decided to call it a holiday tree. That'd be enough for me to recall Gray Davis right there to begin with. But Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has maintained, kept his promise, and he has renamed the tree a Christmas tree, leading some of the press there in California to rename him the Triminator. Hats off there to Arnold Schwarzenegger, and something tells me that no one's going to go up to him and pick an argument to his face anyway. What are you going to do about the Christmas crisis? Because I think that's what it is. And, you know, some people would say, I think, you know, why are you talking about this? You know, these things are going to keep us from celebrating Christmas in our homes, in our churches. It's because this is an indication of where we are as a society over against the freedom of Christians to talk about Christianity in the public square. You know, they're trying to chase the holiday, and that means to chase the gospel right back into our churches and into our homes, saying, get out of our face with this stuff. And also, it tells us a great deal about what would happen if we did not contend for the right to speak and bear witness to our faith in the public square. We would find ourselves in a closet right quick. Let's go to Charlie calling from Missouri, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Charlie, welcome to this discussion. What do you think about all this?
Well, Dr. Mueller, personally, it's nothing that the church hasn't gone through before, realistically. I mean, even from the beginning of time of Christianity. But, I mean, and we cannot do nothing. There's no way we can do anything until basically as a church in whole starts doing apologetics. We have to know what the Bible says. We have to understand the argument and get to the root of the problem and show people lovingly how they're wrong. Go in at cold so they don't rile you up because they're going to try, and just basically poke holes in their argument.
Well, I agree with you on that, Charlie, especially on the need for the church to be aware of the truth, ready to defend the truth, and certainly a good grounding in apologetics. Let me ask you, let's say that there in Missouri, in your town, you're told that your church can't have a float that says Merry Christmas in your city's parade. What do you do then?
Ooh, that's a good one. Well, you challenge it, first of all. I mean, we're being litigated out. This is my personal opinion anyway. We're being litigated out of being able to do anything. We can use the courts to help us.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. So, Charlie, you're saying we should hire a lawyer? And I think that's what we'd have to do. In other words, I think that having a float with the words Merry Christmas on it is not necessarily a great advance for Christian evangelism. I mean, that's no excuse. That's no alternative. That's no substitute for genuine evangelism, which is the hard task of confronting persons with the gospel, the important task of taking the good news to all people everywhere. But once you are told you can't and you accept that, I think you are really accepting a straitjacket on the gospel that no church can accept. And so any church that receives this kind of word, I would suggest to you, you've got to fight back. You've got to contend for the right to share the gospel. Because the minute we begin to accept this kind of restriction, that's the very minute we willingly put on that kind of straitjacket. And you know, I think intimidation is very much in the background to this whole equation. I think there are a lot of people who just think if they put enough pressure on in terms of political correctness, we'll just shut up. And we'll just go away, and we'll do exactly what the Anti-Defamation League executive said, and I quoted from the incident in Denver. He said, we'll just go back to having our religious observances in our homes, in our houses of worship, and in our hearts, and that's it. But, you know, that is not what we're called to do in terms of Christianity. And furthermore, that's not what we are given the right to do in terms of the United States Constitution and the First Amendment and the Bill of Rights. We are told that we have the right of free expression. And to turn saying Merry Christmas into some form of political incorrectness because it's imposing a majoritarian spiritual or Christian perspective, it's just nonsense. What if you're just wishing people a Merry Christmas? Of course, in the word Christmas is the word Christ. That's not incidental. But even for a non-Christian, is that an insult? Is that a hate crime? Is that evidence of insensitivity and intolerance? If you have Merry Christmas on top of the City Hall in Denver, is that a violation of the separation of church and state? Bah humbug, that's my response. Absolute nonsense. Let's bring some sense to this discussion. You give us a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I'm Albert Mohler. Yeah, here we go, folks. My crack research staff here at the programs has brought me a printout from the ACLU website. That's right. Always alert. Where are you going to go if you want to find out what you don't believe on this kind of thing? Well, the ACLU website's a pretty good place. And here you go. Listen to this. In the past year, some religious activists have encouraged public school districts to ignore the Supreme Court's Establishment Clause rulings and to celebrate the religious significance of holidays such as Christmas as a part of their regular school curriculum. Goes on and says, holiday observances in public schools which focus on the religious significance of Christmas to Christians rather than on those aspects of the holiday that have become part of our country's secular culture carry precisely the dangers of religious endorsement and subtle coercive pressure that have led the Supreme Court to mandate a strict separation of church and state within the public schools. Well, number one, we don't have time to deal with that strict separation ideal. Let's just think about this for a moment. What are the secular aspects of the holiday that have passed into our nation's observance? Well, I don't know. What is that? Well, even the snowflake, we're now told, is too Christian. Santa Claus, of course, was a saint based on Saint Nick. You know, what is it? The sleigh? The reindeer? Rudolph? What in the world is supposedly a secular part of the observance? And by the way, how do you explain why people are off that day if it's not because of the Christians observing Christmas? It just happens that this is a strange coincidence. The planets were all in some alignment that led to a holiday, a national holiday. On the 25th of December, this is nonsense. We need to call it just what it is. Let's go to Rob, driving through Texas, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Rob, excuse me, you're in Kansas. Yeah, you just don't know. You're not in Kansas anymore, Rob. You're now in Texas. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'll be in Texas tomorrow, actually. But the Christians have to start living not by the world's definition of meekness, but by Christ. I think we sit back and cower in the corner. When a principal says, we're afraid we're going to get sued, so we're not going to do this. Say, all right, well, we'll sue you. And we have the legal precedents. Call Jay Sekulow and the ACLJ, who resolved that issue in Colorado. We have the legal right to do these things, and because they're scared, they're telling us we can't do it, and they're expecting us to sit and cower in the corner and accept what we're told, and we just can't do that.
Yeah, Rob, I'm in entire agreement with you. You know, our first impulse, I think, isn't to sue, isn't to hire an attorney and go after this, or even to turn to a wonderful Christian legal organization such as the ACLJ with Jay Sekulow. You know, our first thought is, you know, we ought to be able to settle this locally and quietly. But the reality is we have to know what we're up against. We're up against people with attorneys, people who are ready to go to court, people who are ready to use intimidation against public officials, school principals, and all the rest. And without using intimidation, we've got to be there to make our case. And frankly, if we begin to surrender these rights, you know, before long, it's going to be a house church movement in a nation that supposedly has the free exercise of religion. And that's just inconceivable to me. Rob, very thoughtful call. Thanks so much for your thoughts. Let's go to Dave calling from Cleveland, Ohio, listening on WHK. Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dr. Mohler. I have a comment, and although I think my question you've pretty much answered with your previous response, but when it comes to these type of situations that are constantly coming up, they remind me of things like the Boston Tea Party and how the founders were not afraid to stand up to the aggressors and to the intimidators of their day. And I think we kind of have to do the same thing. And I gather that that's the same response you would have to that.
Yeah.
Oh, I do have a question, though, about, say, in public schools, where they're having these rules against expression and the ones that are as silly even as, like you had mentioned, the red and green to celebrate Christmas. Do you think that as a Christian we should have our children on the front lines, even real young children, because they would probably be the ones who would be involved in any situation like that, and they'd be the ones wearing the red and green,
yeah.
And they'd be the ones that would either get suspended or whatever. I tend to feel like we need to do that, but I just wonder what is your opinion on having our, you know, kind of putting our children out there like that?
Yeah, I think involving children in what is essentially civil disobedience is a big responsibility. I think you ask a very sensitive and perceptive question from the Christian worldview perspective. I think we have to look at it and say, there would be situations in which I think we would have to encourage our children, lead our children towards an act of civil disobedience. There are other situations in which I think we would want to protect them while we take the heat. And on this, I would say I think the first response would be to make the adult level appeal for a correct position. But at some point, you know, the reality is, I think in this hard world that's becoming increasingly harder in terms of the secularist attack, I think we have to show our children that there are some things you can't accept. We can't bend the knee to this kind of secularist intimidation. And certainly when it comes to hiding our faith, we simply can't do it. And by the way, the law is on our side. I mean, after all, you know, there are cases in which if kids can wear T-shirts with messages, then they can wear messages that are Christian. If the kid can wear a Satanist message and the one over here can wear an anti-war message, then our kids can wear Christian messages and Christian symbolism. A lot of this is just intimidation and fear on the part of public officials who feel, I think, very much in the center of the bullseye of so much of this. Dave, you ask a good question. I don't know that there's just one right answer on that. I think you have to pray the Lord will give you real guidance when it comes to your children in these circumstances. Let's go to Michelle calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Michelle, welcome. We lost Michelle very quickly. We're going to go to Cindy calling from Cleveland, Ohio. Cindy, welcome to the program.
Yes, Dr. Mueller. Hi, thank you. Listen, my comment was we are definitely in a war, and you know that. I think that we have to take action and quit talking. I think if they want us to keep Christmas in our hearts and in our homes, let's stop buying. All Christians, let's not buy anything for Christmas. Let's hit them in the pocketbook. You know, let's change the executive order that gives us a holiday. Nobody gets off. You know, let's just take some action with our actions. Because we're not going to fight this war with words and lawyers anymore. We're losing.
Okay, Cindy, you've really got me on this one. I got to ask you, because I'm faced with one of two alternatives. Either you mean this or you're playing with us. Which one is it?
I mean it.
You mean it. Okay, I think you do. Cindy says we just need to back out. If the businesses don't want to acknowledge it's Christmas, then don't buy anything during the blank season. And if people don't want to talk about Christmas, then tell them to work on December the 25th. It's kind of like they're riding piggyback on the holiday that they don't want to hear anything about. Well, I don't know how many people are going to be willing to follow Cindy's method of response here, but, you know, I think it would send a big signal. I wonder how many people know that we're offended that they are trying to use Christmas, even while they want to intimidate Christians from celebrating Christmas. It's a lot to think about with the holiday on the line and fast approaching. We'll be right back with some final thoughts. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back, folks. We're going to keep a watch on this whole Christmas issue, especially as the holiday now fast approaches. Remember our website, www.albertmohler.com. That's M-O-H-L-E-R. You'll find updates, articles, my daily crosswalk commentary, and access to recordings of this program that are available on streaming audio. And we would love for you to send us newspaper reports, articles, incidents from your own experience, your own town, your own reading of the media and the newspapers, because we need to know about these things. And it's not just that we can get upset about them. It's that we can really kind of understand the big picture of what we're facing in terms of hostility to Christmas, which is an undisguised and unveiled form of opposition to Christianity. Speaking of that opposition, all you have to do is go to the newsstand this week and look at the Christmas edition week's reports of Newsweek and Time magazine. Just about this time every year, the newsweeklies, especially Time, Newsweek, and U.S. News and World Report, generally turn to Christmas, and they have a special Christmas issue that comes out a couple weeks before the holiday, and they have some special theme, and often they will look at a theological or biblical issue, and usually with disastrous result, and that's basically what we have. Time and Newsweek are both putting out cover stories trying to debunk the validity, the historicity of the Christmas stories in the Bible. Newsweek says this, and I quote, "The Nativity saga is neither fully fanciful nor fully factual, but a layered narrative of early tradition and enduring theology." Well, this comes out the very day that polls indicate that over 70% of Americans believe that the Christmas story is true, and almost 80% believe that Jesus was born to a virgin with no human father. We're going to be talking on Thursday about why these major national news magazines would take on Christmas, Christianity, the Bible, and the Nativity story. Why is it that they give all this attention, and why do they obviously and editorially try to debunk the truth of the Christian story? You know, the bottom line is this. It's because if it's true, then the entire Christian truth claim is true. If the Christmas stories are accurate as they are, then the entire system of Christian truth is accurate. And if that is true, then the entire worldview of the cultural elite and the media elite will have to change. In other words, they have to go at Christmas, because Christmas is at the very center of the Christian truth claim. It's at the very center of the gospel, because it is in the Christmas stories in the Bible, in the Nativity stories, that we come to know who Jesus Christ is, how he came, and why it matters. Again, we'll be talking about that on Thursday. Remember that Wednesday's Ask Anything Wednesday, your opportunity to set the agenda and ask your question, and we'll be back tomorrow for another interesting discussion about something that really matters. With Truth on the Line, I'm Albert Mohler. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Mohler's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.